to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the third and final hour of tonight's barn-burning edition of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. I want to thank Keith Alexander for his services this evening as he worked a little overtime, sticking with us for the first 2 hours as we broadcast to you tonight from our flagship radio station, AM 1380 WLRM, right here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. We are also now being broadcast in Memphis on our sister station, AM 1600 WMQM, and of course going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. As we announced last week, April is Confederate History Month. We got it kicked off in a big way last Saturday night when we welcomed Sam Dixon, our debut guest for our 2011 celebration of Confederate history and heritage. Tonight we have no scheduled guest, but I would like to welcome now to the program another of the Political Cesspool co-hosts, Mr. Bill Rowland. Bill, welcome back to the show.
James, always a pleasure, especially during Confederate History Month. I just absolutely enjoy coming on the show during Confederate History and Heritage Month because it's so important that we Southerners continue to celebrate and to honor our heritage. And that's not saying that other people don't have a right nor an obligation, in fact, to celebrate their heritage. But for us, this is a very important time because it was the South's attempt to become a nation on its own. And, of course, for the time being, a failed attempt. But nevertheless, you know, we do recognize the courage and the valor and the chivalry of the Confederate soldier and of our ancestors during this time. And I think it's very important that that Southerners continue to do so publicly, continue to be outspoken about our heritage, because truly, if we don't talk about our heritage in public and defend it in public, then we certainly will lose it.
It's a very spiritual time for us as Southerners, time for family and tradition, and certainly to honor the sacrifice of our ancestors as they fought the good fight during the war between the states. Of course, the Political Cesspool radio program is the official radio program of Confederate History Month 2011. We've been doing our part with on-air series each year for the past 7 years since our very inception to celebrate Confederate history each April. And we've had a lot of, I guess you could call them Southern celebrities. They found their way to our studio in April over the course of the last few years, including people like Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo, author of Lincoln Unmasked. We have had Richard Flowers, the curator of Beauvoir, which is, of course, the Jefferson Davis Home and Presidential Library down there in Biloxi, Mississippi. Not only have I been there, when Hurricane Katrina came through in 2005, it damaged the roof of Beauvoir, the original slate roof there. And the some of the organizations down there were auctioning off pieces of the roof, the actual roof, to help aid in the restoration of Beauvoir. And I have a piece of it here on my mantle, the piece of the original roof of the Jefferson Davis Home down there. Michael Andrew Grissom, of course, author of Southern by the Grace of God, has been on the program, as well as many, many other pro-South luminaries. S. Waite Rawls of the Museum of the Confederacy, he's the president there. Clint Johnson authored The Politically Incorrect Guide to the South. So many, you can't mention them all, but they've all been on the show at some point over the course of the last 7 years. Tonight we have no guest, but we are certainly going to revel in Confederate history. There's a lot of things we could talk about. You're trying to encapsulate everything that was great and glorious about the Confederate States of America in 1 month, and all we have is a little bit of time each Saturday night when we're on the air live. Thankfully, the good Lord's looking down on us. April's a little bit of an anomaly this year, at least as far as Saturdays are concerned. Of course, every month only has 4 weeks, but there do happen to be 5 Saturdays in April, which means that Confederate History Month is going to be one show extra for us this year as compared to last year. So a little bit more time for us to bang on the Confederate drums. And, of course, Bill mentioned, as well as anyone, why it's important that we do it. Bill, we got an hour tonight. the scope of this is so broad. There's so many great stories of valor and gallantry and heroism that we could focus on. How do you pick one? What should we talk about tonight?
Well, of course, we can always start from the top down, you know, starting with Robert E. Lee, who I want to mention this, too, that, you know, there is an attempt, of course, as usual, by the NAACP, the liberal media, and the various left-wing groups that attempt on every occasion to downplay, at the very least, downplay Confederate heritage, and the very worst, vilify it and smear it. Now, you know, this is the sesquicentennial of the war between the states. And so it is a very important historical, really a historical mark and a period. So it's very interesting that during the centennial of the Civil War, 50 years ago, it was the 1960s. And during the 1950s, the very last veterans of the Civil War, of the war between the states, were beginning to die off. There were very, very few left, a handful by the early 1950s who were still living, and all of them over 100 years old. The very last Confederate veteran to die was Walter Williams, who died the same year I was born, 1958, shortly after I was born. So I can say that I was alive when the last Confederate veteran was still on Earth. And it's interesting because he had outlived everyone else from the war. The Confederate lived the longest. And for many years thereafter, Confederate widows were still living. And there were many Confederate widows. I actually had the privilege of meeting a Confederate widow in Alabama a number of years ago before she passed. So there were, you know, there's still a tenuous but very strong thread that takes us back to that era. But interestingly enough, during the 1960s, the centennial was overshadowed by the Civil Rights Movement. So the Civil Rights Movement overshadowed the Civil War. And just as now, there was a deliberate attempt by the various members of the Civil Rights Movement, the various organizations, to try to displace Confederate heritage during this period, to make it appear to be villainous and ugly. And so we see 50 years later now this same process is underway. We have a black president in the White House, and certainly the enemies of Confederate heritage have the upper hand in terms of power, influence, and, of course, media coverage. So it's very important that we as Southerners not allow the media nor these various so-called civil rights organizations, militant black organizations, liberal organizations of all kinds, to bully us out of our heritage. And I think that that's the task we face over the next 4 years, is to, for once, stand up for our heritage during an appropriate time, during the sesquicentennial, mark every important date with some sort of commemoration.
Bill, hold on right there, buddy. I like where you're going with this. We've got to push pause. We're going to come back and let you continue right after this. Stay tuned.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Do you want to call in and sound off on your favorite Confederate hero, your favorite Confederate legend? Well, do so now. We're the only talk radio program in the country that is dedicating an hour of each live broadcast during the month of April to celebrate the brave Confederate soldier. Call in now, 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-NEWS. Going to do something we rarely do, and that's open up the phone lines to allow you to salute our boys in gray. Bill, you were certainly on a roll there as the political cesspool continues on tonight. live, unrehearsed, and uncensored. Got a very good crowd this evening at the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party. If you want to join it for the last 40 minutes or so of the show this evening, cfcc.org, cfcc.org. But Bill, by all means, continue on.
Well, as I said at the beginning of this segment, James, the best place to start with Confederate heritage is start at the top. As I said, various organizations, black organizations primarily, and then, of course, liberal organizations in the media, attempt to smear Confederate heritage to transform it into some villainous plot against blacks and for slavery and so forth. But the place to start is at the top with Robert E. Lee. Now, during his lifetime, Robert E. Lee was one of the most admired men in America, not only before the war, but after the war. When the southern states began to secede, General Winfield Scott, who at that time was the highest-ranking general in the Union Army in 1861, wanted Robert E. Lee to command the Union Army. And Lee simply could not draw his sword against his native Virginia and chose instead a command of Virginia forces. Well, after the war, Robert E. Lee was actually approached by a group of Northern Democrats and was actually asked whether he would be willing to run for president of the United States. The Democrats wanted to draft Robert E. Lee right after the war as a presidential candidate to run against, at that time, I think it would have been Andrew Johnson or later on Ulysses S. Grant. Now, what kind of man is that your enemies come to you while the blood is still damp in the ground from this most horrific and bloody and fratricidal war, and say, this is a man who we would consider to be president because he was so universally admired by friend and foe alike? So the place to start with being proud of your Confederate heritage is at the very top with Robert E. Lee. And, of course, there are so many Confederate generals, so many Confederate leaders were noble, admirable, and chivalrous men that none of them are really any cause for shame against the South, except those who later on became scalawags, and there were a few. We have to admit, even the South had some dark times after the war. But certainly those prominent leaders of the Confederacy were all worthy of admiration. Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, of course, our own Nathan Bedford Forrest, so many who sacrificed everything for the independence of the Southland. And, of course, our own ancestors. I had dozens of ancestors, both direct and collateral, who fought in that war for the South. One joining the Confederate Army at age 53 because he had already lost two sons in the conflict, and the only son he had left was his young son at home. And so to avenge his two lost sons, he joined the Confederate Army at 53 years old. And also, one of my direct ancestors who was wounded at the Battle of Gettysburg, but who lost all four of his brothers in the war to various causes. So this is the sacrifice we made. And nobody has the right to come to us and say, that's not good enough. You still ought to be ashamed of yourself. When we go back into our history and we research our own background, we find this same sort of chivalry that was reflected in the absolutely noble character of Robert E. Lee.
Bill Roland absolutely on a roll tonight as he lays out the case for Confederate history. And, you know, this was something that was so universally accepted in the South all the way up really until the last few decades. And I think still the vast majority of Southerners, as we found out when Mississippi was allowed to vote on the flag issue and it carried by a whopping 2-1 margin, which in politics is just a landslide. How far removed are we, Bill, from the kind of Confederate pride we would like to see and the kind of hatred of the South that the media would like to see? I guess the correct way to phrase the question is, where among those two polar opposites do we find ourselves in 2011?
There are some dismal changes in the South, and that's simply a fact. And that should make us more determined and more ardent in our desire to preserve our heritage. Tremendous demographic changes have taken place in the South. Many people from the North have moved here for economic reasons primarily, or to retire here for the good weather. Blacks are beginning to move back to the South from the North, and of course bring with them a sense of entitlement, feeling that they're moving back to a place that they should hold in contempt. But nevertheless, that shouldn't change the heart of the true Southerner. And the heart of the true Southerner is always with our traditions and our ancestors. You know, a number of years ago, an Indian writer from India, who was, I think, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, was traveling all over the United States to write about people in various parts of the country. And this was very much covered by the media. His trip through the United States was really covered by the media very intensely, and every word that he wrote was soaked up by the media, and, oh, they just, you know, really admired him and were just, oh, this is such an honor for this man to come and write about America. Well, when he got to the South, he was absolutely overwhelmed by the faith and the character of the Southern people, and he wrote exuberant things about the South. He wrote exuberantly about the South, that this is the only place he'd ever been where people who believe in their religion truly believe in it. He said, these are people of real faith. These are people with real hospitality. And it was after these glowing things he wrote about the South that suddenly he went completely off the map with the media. They simply stopped covering him until he was well out of the South and was on the road somewhere else. But you know, of all the places in the United States that he chose, he wrote his best material about the South in terms of saying, this is really what, the United States, these are the best people in the country. And we should have taken that as a great compliment. But, of course, you know, the liberal media wasn't going to allow that to happen. They weren't going to allow that kind of information out about us. But these are the descendants of those Confederates. These are the same people. And, you know, in every Southern state, there's still a large number of people who have that heritage. And it's not a one-dimensional heritage. It's not just about the war. It's about our sense of ourselves. And unfortunately, that national sense of ourselves only existed in a period of 4 years between 1861 and 65. But it was a defining time. It was a catalyst for who we are. It was said that the South really didn't exist until after the war between the states, because all of these people were fighting for their individual states. But once the war was over, suddenly every Southerner from every Southern state realized that they had this sense of self and sense of common background among them. And so, you know, this is what any Southerner who's listening to me, from Texas to Louisiana to North Carolina, knows exactly what I'm talking about, that any Southerner can go to any Southern state and feel some sense of home there. And so that is also part of what we're talking about with this sesquicentennial celebration.
Hold on right there, Bill. Bill, listening to Bill tonight is inspiring me, and I hope and I'm sure that it is having the same effect on you. Thankfully, we've got two more segments tonight with Bill Rowland as we celebrate Confederate history on the Political Cesspool. We'll be back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
If it's the last thing, you know, I had a couple of notes for this third hour, but now I'm reminded why we chose not to invite a guest to join us this evening. The passion that co-host Bill Rowland's bringing to the program tonight is the kind of passion that you will find in the heart of any Southerner when asked to provide a commentary on Confederate history, and that's what we're doing tonight in the Political Cesspool, live, unrehearsed, and uncensored. We're going to allow Bill encourage Bill to carry on right after we take this call. We asked for callers, so I ought to take one now that they're coming in. Let's go to Mishko in Los Angeles. Mishko, welcome back. Are you there, Mishko? Either Mishko's not there or I'm not. Bill, are you there?
I'm here. I think I heard Mishko come on.
Are you there, Mishko? All right, looks like he'll have to call back. But, Bill, turn it back over to you while we wait on our caller.
James, back in the 1990s, I was very much involved in the fights all over the South at the time, the controversies involving Confederate symbols, particularly the Confederate flag and particularly the representation of Confederate flags on various state flags. And what I found during that time is that many Southerners who were not necessarily well-educated in history or who didn't necessarily know all about their ancestors or what their ancestors did, came forward in huge numbers and came forward in really with great enthusiasm to defend these symbols, to defend these things that represent the South to them. And it may have been a race car fan at Talladega waving a big Confederate flag, or it may have been a farmer in Alabama with a Confederate flag on tag on his truck, or it may have been a kid in Mississippi with a Confederate flag patch on his jacket. These symbols came to mean so much to the people because they did represent that time when we fought for our liberty as a free nation, and that still resonated with people so many years later, who really did not have a firm understanding of what the war was all about or who all the generals were or even a knowledge of the battles. But what they did know is that something inside them swelled up when they saw a Confederate flag or when they sang Dixie. Something in them still resonated with the chords of ancient memory, so to speak, and still had an impression on them. And there were also many Southerners who had rejected all of these things, who had said to themselves, we're going to bury the past, and we're going to forget it, and we're going to try to erase it. And what I found about these people were that they really shamed themselves in doing so. They became everything that their enemies wanted them to be, and they were simply puppets to a scheme that really held them in contempt as well. And there was one of these men who was a professor at the University of Mississippi at the time. And he was very much active in trying to get rid of the Confederate flag as a football pennant at Ole Miss games. And he was very active in seeing that this was done away with because it was hurting recruiting at Ole Miss. And he felt it was time to just get rid of that flag and embrace multiculturalism and so forth and so on. Well, he believed that he could still hold on to a few of the other little artifacts and the other little memorials to the South. And what happened was, of course, eventually the establishment at Ole Miss turned against him and made him out to be one of these retrograde Southerners, a relic of the past. So he became a victim of himself. He, trying to separate himself from his own people, was trampled underfoot, just like the rest of the Southerners who had stood up for their heritage. So, you know, you Southerners out there who believe that you can simply dismiss or reject your heritage, you know, I have to ask you, you know, is there no blood in your veins? Have you no soul? Do you just want to be the product of some Hollywood script that holds you in contempt or the product of some New York advertising campaign? Because that's what you are. If you hold your own past and your own heritage in contempt, then you're just the product of somebody else's ideas and somebody else's viewpoint and not your own. And that means you have no soul, you have no blood in your veins, and you can't think for yourself. And there are a number of Southerners out there who are, unfortunately, in this situation. That they feel like that they want to put the past behind them and they want to sweep it under the rug and they want to step forth into some vague future. Well, that future doesn't exist for you. And turning on your own people is certainly not only disgraceful and contemptible, it is scorning your heritage. And, James, that's what Ham did to Noah. He scorned his heritage, and he cursed the future generations of his family because of that scorn. So, you know, all Southerners, I would say, whatever you agree or disagree on, don't scorn your heritage. It's worth preserving, and it's worth celebrating.
Bill, with that being said, and I couldn't agree more, we have Mishko back, who tried to call in earlier, so we certainly want to try to work him on before this commercial break. Bill Rowland, man, what an incredible performance so far this evening. But it's all flowing from the heart, and I think that is so obvious, which is why it's so good. Mishko, are you there with us now?
I'm there with you guys now. I apologize for that. My cheap Chinese phone crapped out on me. So
you're loud and clear now.
Good, good. One thing I just want to mention that really, as someone who's from California, which would be considered, I guess, a Yankee, but is probably a Southerner at heart.
Did you catch that, Bill?
No, I'm sorry. The board cut me off there for a second. Program director there was talking to me for a second. Could I hear that again?
Well, I think Mishko just dropped off, but I'm sure it was a salient comment. I was sitting here talking with someone else briefly in the studio. Man, well, besides you, Bill, I can't say that I'm necessarily on the ball this hour. But nevertheless, I want to thank Mishko for the call. Of course, Mishko does great work. I think several people in the chat room at the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party are familiar with him, and we certainly salute him and thank him for calling in. If anyone else would like to call in and offer their thoughts and reflections on Confederate History Month, 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-NEWS. Bill, you mentioned a lot of very important topics there in the last few minutes. We have a little bit of time left in this segment, and then one more segment. And I certainly want to, even though we have 3 weeks left in Confederate History Month, three more shows this April, let's really inspire people to go out there and stand up and speak out just like we've been doing all these years in a very high-profile capacity. What is the most, and I asked this question of Sam Dixon last week, and I told him before I asked him, it was an impossible question to answer, and he agreed and said he couldn't answer it. But when it, for you, Bill, and the reason it's so hard is because there's just hundreds of examples. Most inspirational story from the war, favorite hero, where do you go?
Wow, that is a tough question. It's a big question. You know, when I think about the war, I try to think of those Confederates who did something single-handedly that was so remarkable that it's almost unbelievable. And the one I go back to, and I think I've mentioned him before, was Captain Isaac Brown of the CSS Arkansas, one of the first ironclads in the Confederacy. And Commander Brown's performance at the helm of the Arkansas was so extraordinary, it's almost hard to believe that these things happened. But he literally sailed the unfinished Arkansas down the river shortly before Memphis was captured by the North. It was still an incomplete ship. Sailed it down to Yazoo, Mississippi, and using whatever labor he could find, completed this ship literally in a cotton field, practically, and then sailed the ship down to the Battle of Vicksburg, and with one ship defeated the entire Union Navy at Vicksburg and saved Vicksburg from capture by the United States Navy, which, by the way, was under the command of very experienced naval officers and with a completely trained naval crews on every ship. And Isaac Brown sailed the USS Arkansas, or steamed the CSS Arkansas down to Vicksburg with gunners who were actually from a Missouri cavalry unit. So, you know, his performance was so remarkable that it's hard to believe, but it's one of the only times in history I know of when a single ship defeated an entire fleet
and then
drove it away and saved the city and won a battle in the process.
Bill, hold on right there. Got to take one more break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
I can tell you, Bill, that you are getting rave reviews tonight in the CFCC political cesspool virtual fan party. They are loving the history. They're loving the stories. And this is stuff you're not really, well, you're just not going to hear anywhere else. You're not going to hear it on the History Channel. You're not going to hear it certainly in any newspapers. You'll never hear it again in a classroom. And if it weren't for the political cesspool, you wouldn't hear about it at all anymore unless you dug out some, you know, antiquated history books and did your own research, which is hard to do. This is why I'm so proud. One of the hundreds of reasons why I'm so proud to be the host of this show. We do the stuff that nobody else does. We are so unique and so refreshing. And I'm excited to be able to bring that to the audience each April.
Sounds like one of your fans in the background.
Yeah, you know how it is with the fans here, but they really get worked up for Confederate History Month here in the studio, the interns and all.
Well,
but you know, this is something that should be celebrated every month of the year, not just April. But we certainly do our part with what time we have available, and there's so much we got to cover. But you know, again, it's just impossible to zero in on stories because you just have so many to choose from. You just gave a couple right there, Bill, that I'm sure most people, I mean, not most, but some are hearing for the first time. Last week, Sam and I mentioned in passing heroes like Governor Isham Harris of Tennessee, DeWitt Smith Job, a story with which you're very well familiar, Bill, the crew of the Hunley, and there's just countless. These are stories that personify what was best about the American experiment. These were real men. I mean, certainly people have a passing knowledge or cursory knowledge about Lee and Jackson and Forrest, and that's well-deserved because, I mean, these were titans among the gods. But there's just so many examples we could give. It's almost overwhelming, and thankfully, like I said, we have a couple of weeks left this April, and we're going to continue to scratch the surface, but you know, Bill, again, I ask, where do we go from here?
Well, I had mentioned Isaac Brown, the commander of the CSS Arkansas, and also John Hunt Morgan, who was the Jeb Stuart of the West, a chivalrous and noble man, very popular with the ladies, who fought absolutely with all of his heart and was, of course, murdered by Northern troops up in Tennessee, actually during the Christmas holiday in 1864. He'd gone there to visit and was gunned down unarmed. But where do we go from here is not a simple answer. I think it's important that every Southerner somehow express pride in our heritage during this time, during the sesquicentennial. James, I mentioned to you that when I was on the interstate the other day, coming up from Mississippi, I passed a semi-rig, a big semi, and the driver of the semi had a big Confederate flag on the grill of his truck. And I thought to myself, you know, this man, single-handedly, is doing as much for Confederate heritage as any Confederate heritage group or any big planned event, because he's taking his flag all over the country. He's showing off the Confederate flag wherever he goes, some places where it's probably not welcome. So he is showing the real courage of the Confederate soldier and perhaps his Confederate ancestors by, you know, placing that flag on the grill of his truck and driving all over the country and saying basically to anyone who sees it, I'm proud of who I am.
And, you know,
that,
Bill,
is really, that's important for all Southerners to do something like that, to take some little measure of pride in who you are. Donate a book, a pro-Confederate book, a book about one of your Confederate heroes to the library. Get a bumper sticker. You know, there are many ways to do this. Decorate a Confederate grave with a little battle flag. Buy a battle flag. You know, let me mention this, James. By the way, as you know, I have access to the world's largest Confederate battle flag.
That's right. Now, people, this isn't an exaggeration, and this isn't just something Bill's, popping off about. This is official. It has to be lifted with a crane.
It has to be lifted with a crane. It's 75 by 50 feet. It is a gigantic flag. It covers a house. And I'm going to say this right now, any of you who are listening, this flag can be made available. Of course, it wouldn't be free, but we could certainly make it available for a big event. If you really have something planned, then we can make available a Confederate flag worthy of the biggest event. So think about that. Any of you who are in heritage organizations of any kind, just contact us through the show, through James, through the website, and we will discuss the possibility of making this flag available, because we need to show our Confederate heritage during this time for the next 4 years in the biggest way possible. And there's no way bigger than having the biggest Confederate battle flag on display.
And there's some interesting stories behind the scenes about that flag and some of the battles Bill has taken that flag into. I don't mean battles in so much as it stirred up controversy, just the things, you know, some of the events that this flag has flown out, just very inspirational, and that perhaps is for another day as we're running short on time. But, you know, another thing that encourages me, you know, we saw a couple of years ago, and we made mention earlier, Mississippi passes a statewide referendum in favor of keeping the Confederate battle flag as part of their official state flag in just overwhelming fashion. We saw, you know, just today or just this last week, very interesting poll results coming out of Mississippi. It seems as though, Bill, and this goes all the way back to what I said at the beginning of the show, despite 50 years of constant inundation, constant brainwashing, billions of dollars have been invested to change the public consciousness on these issues, to try to reformat our brains, if you will. And yet still we find, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the mainstream media, despite their best efforts, still do not speak for the average working class, white Christian, middle class Americans. And you can't go, even in Memphis, you know, a big city, in any small city, it's just you can't avoid seeing it. And it's still in just about every small city in the South. You have some sort of Confederate marker or monument. But still to this day in Memphis, it's hard to drive around for more than 10 minutes without seeing a Confederate flag bumper sticker or a license plate. I was actually at Shelby Farms here, and if anyone's familiar with Memphis, this is the largest city park in the world. I think it's bigger than Central Park, is it not, Bill?
Oh, it's about 10 times bigger than Central Park, if not more than that.
And it's right here in Memphis. Huge. And we were there to have a picnic last week, and there was a – when I was coming back, I noticed that the car that was parked next to us, and this car wasn't there when we got there, but it had, you know, the Confederate battle flag there on its front bumper and the license plate holder spot. And I happened to have a free coupon for a Chick-fil-A sandwich in the car. And I didn't propagandize or anything. I didn't do any shameless self-promoting for the show. I didn't even sign my name. I just said, you know, I appreciate you flying the flag on your license plate. You know, enjoy a meal on me. God save the South. And left it underneath his windshield wiper. How can people, Bill, going forward, and you just brushed over it a second ago, we have a couple of minutes left in the show tonight. How would you encourage people as this month continues to celebrate Confederate pride in their own way?
You know, I think one of the best ways is, since we're coming into the barbecue and cookout months here in the South, is have people over and say, hey, I'm having a Confederate celebration party, a Confederate independence party. Would you like to come? You know, we'll have
hot dogs
and hamburgers or whatever, and just be prepared to sing Dixie. You know, any little gesture is better than no gesture at all. And, of course, there are organizations that are planning big events, and these events are listed on websites. And if you can't actually do anything yourself, at least attend one of these events, whether it's a reenactment or a commemoration of some sort, a memorial service. Just attend one of these memorial services to express and to demonstrate your pride in your heritage and your willingness to honor those people who died so that the South might be a nation, but who certainly died that their descendants might have someone to be proud of in defending their liberties and defending their hearth and their homes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Political Cesspool Radio Program's 2011 celebration of Confederate History Month will, of course, continue next week right here on the program and for the 2 weeks following that. All throughout the month of April, we will be doing an hour-long tribute to the South, and we hope that you will make our website one of your daily reads, not just this month, but around the year, but particularly this month as we are heavy on the Confederate issue. And, of course, be sure to make plans to join us each and every Saturday during the month of April, as this will continue with more special guests and behind-the-scenes commentary like Bill Rowland has brought to you tonight. Bill, great job. 20 seconds, final word.
The final word is God save the South.
Couldn't have said it better myself, and in fact, I said it just last week and added a little Chick-fil-A sandwich to that. Thank you, Bill, for what you brought to the program tonight. Very inspiring. For Bill Rowland, Keith Alexander, Winston Smith, and Eddie Miller, the rest of the Political Cesspool staff, I'm James Edwards. We'll see you next week, everybody. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.